September 11th, 2009, the Norris Group returns with its award-winning event, I Survived Real Estate 2009. For this critical final quarter, the Norris Group has assembled a gold panel of accomplished industry specialists to discuss the impact of seismic economic shifts, head-scratching regulations, challenging legislation, and the accelerated pace of opportunities emerging for real estate professionals. 100% of the proceeds for this unique event support the Orange County affiliate of Susan G. Komen for The Cure. This event would not be possible without the generous help of the following platinum partners: the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association and President Bill Tan, Investors Workshop and President Sean Watkins and Angel Bronskiest, Invest Club for Women and Director Iris Veneration, Fry Wiles, the creative agency responsible for iSurvive2009.com, J.K. Short Sales and Kathy Van Sleen, Entrust California and Hugh Bromaw, the Nixon Library, MVT Productions, who always provide the audio-visual needs, the Business Press, airing the event live over the Internet, and White House Catering, who will provide the three-course meal for this black tie event. Visit iSurvive2009.com for more details.
Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Today we're joined by two people that are associated with the National Real Estate Investors Association. Rebecca McLean, she's the executive director, and Charles Tessel, and he is the director of legislation affairs. Welcome, both of you, first of all.
Thank you, Bruce.
Thank you.
I would imagine that this has been an interesting time. So, Rebecca, first of all, how was membership growth from, let's say, 2000 to 2006 or 7? Was it about as explosive as the market was?
Absolutely it was, Bruce. When I came on board in 2002 or 2003, we had 44 groups. Now, part of that was just from lack of people knowing who we were. But part of it is just that not as much information out there, not people looking for those groups. We went from 44 to, in 2004, 2005, we were into the 200s. Coming into 06 and 07, we are at 250 organizations. So absolute explosive growth in the number of organizations that we were reaching, but also the membership inside the organizations themselves were growing, you know, close to 30 to 50% a year.
And how many members at that point, at the peak, were we at?
I would say we probably had 45,000 plus additional members. Because of reporting cycles, it was hard to actually track that individual number. But it was a large amount of people.
When you say groups, we're talking about individual clubs that might be in the different states?
Absolutely. National REA acts as an umbrella association. We are a federation of local real estate investing associations.
Okay.
And so we talk about it at the group and association level, but actually they represent, of course, individual members.
Okay. And since the peak of the market, how has membership changed? Is it up or down? Because it's interesting. I've seen clubs do both.
Well, and from our perspective, we haven't had the fall off that we truthfully expected. We are still somewhere around 220 to 230, and the groups that had fallen off were not really the strong groups anyway. And same thing is true about membership inside those associations. They have certainly declined, but in some ways not as much as we had thought. And the other interesting thing is we get applications every day for people still interested in beginning local REA associations. I think that is to be attributed to the fact that people know that they need information now more than they ever did.
I wonder if the group might have gone from a group of speculators to really truly having an investor mentality and a much longer term view of hanging on to real estate.
Well, excellent point, and I think you made that point for us at our marketing and technology conference 2 years ago now, that you expected that to happen in the groups. And I think that's yet another of your predictions that you can count as very accurate. We in being in close contact with their groups, have talked to them about their programming and what they've seen with their membership, and we're finding that you're not getting a lot of people wandering in looking for what is this real estate stuff. It is more people that have been in the business and either have made mistakes or are afraid that they're going to make mistakes and are much more focused on advanced education.
Charles, when you're approaching the government side of it where the legislation is being created, is it better to come with a group that is viewed as an investor rather than a speculative group?
Oh, much so, much more so.
Okay.
When you can show that you are professionals, that you're investing, that you are ready for a constituent, that's the key piece there, whether your constituency is investing in their district or living in their district, that brings the power to bear.
Okay.
And Bruce, the message that we really try to bring when we take our message to whether it be a state or local legislature or even at the federal level, we really try to give them the message that, hey, we are as much a local business owner as, you know, the gentleman that owns the dry cleaning in the area or, you know, any other local business that you have, which is not always the way that we're viewed, but we are business owners and we contribute a significant amount to that community.
You know, that's, you know, the event we're having September 11th, and the associations that are known would be, you know, California Association of Realtors or NAR and so forth. And really what you're doing for the investors is saying we're as legitimate as any of those other associations. Let us have a voice.
Absolutely. And that's the goal of the legislative program.
I think one of the things that's missing in interviewing the different heads of these associations is there's often kind of a single-mindedness of purpose when they approach Congress and they say, okay, this would be a really good thing. They're often not necessarily taking into account the whole group as opposed to one piece of it. And the investor piece probably doesn't get much attention at all. Would you say that that's true?
I think that's very true. And part of what I think makes us unique is we have realtors as members. We have appraisers as members. We have all different kinds of businesses that apply to real estate as members of our associations, as well as having a core of what would be our traditional investors. And what we found is when we went to our first day on the Hill, which I'll let Charles actually go into depth on, but as we were presenting who we were to those leaders, what we heard over and over again is we had no idea this segment existed apart from all of these other people we had been talking to. And they assumed that we were lumped in and that other people were expressing their voice, and that was not at all true at the time. And so I think we were able to open their eyes that, hey, investors, as you know, we as RIA members view ourselves, are a different market segment, and we have, you know, totally different goals in many times than the other people that you're hearing from.
What's interesting about this, Rebecca, is that California, my home state, of course, and we've got a big problem. We have too many homes that are going to be coming back to the lenders that are in disrepair, and yet most of the, not legislation, but most of the loan programs are really geared towards selling the next home to the owner-occupant. And they're not going to buy these homes. And so they're going to have a real problem trying to solve this without the investor's help. It just is not going to happen. And that's really the hardest thing to get across to them, is that we need to realize the investor is going to play the key role in getting this to be better from here.
And that's an excellent point. In fact, actually, at the last day on the Hill, when we met in D.C. and went up to meet with different congressional offices, both the representatives and the senators, we had, you know, 60 different professionals going in, meeting, and that was one of the key points that we made. And I won't say we made it in a vacuum, but what I'll point out is by making that statement, what it did was gave us a seat at the table.
Absolutely important. I was just going to kind of ask you if it felt a little perfunctory as far as their attention or their ability to listen to what you're saying, or was the point really to get a seat at the table where you gradually get heard?
It is to get a seat at the table. And there's kind of a niche mentality. Each different congressional office typically focuses on something different, and you latch on to different groups that are focused onto your concerns and your issues, or different offices. And those offices, we had one member, I remember very specifically asking, so when I give you my card, does it go in file 13 or what? And, you know, the young staffer was, no, this is what happens to it, actually. And he gave this process of who gets a copy of it and how it's filed so that when these issues come up, they're there to follow up, you know, that your information is there to follow up with. In fact, that same person who asked that question about a month later called me in a panic and said, they called me and sent me a bill of 30 pages. What do I do? I said, read it and respond. <You know? laughs> And that's exactly what they wanted.
Now, is that something I find myself, I do a fair amount of interviews with people and news or magazines or that. And I've really found they appreciate me taking the time to explain to them what they're about to write about. And as odd as that sounds, do you actually get to assist these people that are really helping Congress understand things? Do they ever ship you a copy of it and say, can you please explain what the heck I'm reading?
Very much so. And sometimes they won't put it quite in those terms. You know, they'll be a little more, you know,
of course,
some advice on
of
that.
Course,
and,
no, I was,
and, you know, and they'll give you, can you give me your perspective, and we go from there. And, you know, always bearing in mind that they're the congressman, so they're right. Now let's start on how we can help. And when you approach it that way, they're, because all you're doing is making them better, stronger, and making sure they don't walk out and put their foot in their mouth, and they don't want to do that.
How politically motivated is the end answer to, okay, this is good or this is bad? And I guess that's probably a silly question, but, you know, you kind of always hope there's, oh, yeah, this is really going to be very unpopular, but I'm going to stand for it anyway.
It really comes down to the voters. My comment earlier about being a constituent, it is critical. When you can show that the impact of a bill, for example, we're supporting and have just had Representative Pascrell move forward H.R. 3440, which is will make it'll be a change in how dealers in real estate are recognized, so that if you do an installment loan, if you do a couple of them in a year, you're not considered a dealer. And what that'll do is start doing more land contracts and providing so that people who can't get credit to buy a property can come buy a property from somebody who owns property.
Mm-hmm.
And speeding that up. And as we laid that out to various members across the political spectrum, as they understood how their constituents would benefit,
I see,
they signed on.
I see.
And that was really laying it out, whether it was a small mom-and-pop business orientation or a higher-end, a community that had a high amount of minorities in it who wouldn't normally qualify for the bank loans. They said, my constituents will benefit from this. And they recognized and said, I'm on board.
Specifically, there's a loan program that used to be implemented for investors that got taken away in 1996, and I'm sure will show up again for investors as soon as FHA has a lot of lender-owned properties, but a 203K loan.
Okay.
It used to be available to investors, and it's the kind of financing that you buy a property, and along with it is the dollars necessary for repairs. That loan program is still available for owner-occupants, but it's very rarely used. But for investors, that would be a big deal. And again, that might be, is it politically not too favorable to help out the investor yet? Is that group still kind of to blame for this whole mess? Is that the sense of it that you get?
Well, actually, no. I would say that the mortgage brokers have taken a hit on that.
Okay.
they took the hit on that side of it.
And the appraiser may be the close second?
Yeah, I guess exactly.
Okay.
And there were enough along those lines. And you heard about investors because they got in over their head or they were too leveraged and the market dropped below where they were at and some of those went under. And sometimes at a very high publicity rate was a problem. But typically what's happened is the rehab and the people who are buying in and buying these properties are actually looked upon pretty favorably, especially by local communities. I was actually at a task force yesterday with a small community. They have, 60,000 people, and they were focused on how do we get these people in here to invest in our community to fix these properties up so they're not blighted.
Okay.
And, you know, we overcome blight, we get them back on the tax payrolls, and there's that kind of mentality that's starting to grow in the city manager level.
But one of the things about that is that I think, especially where Charles was talking about here locally, which is in the Cincinnati, Ohio area, is that we have made significant strides with the RIA group to paint a positive image of the investor and the rental owner. And we have partnered with a lot of organizations within the city that are traditionally against investors and rental housing providers. But we've been able to show great positive results. We've been able to show investment in communities that have made significant differences in that community. We really have a track record that we can go in and present so that the groups that might traditionally not welcome us are much more open to us now because we've got years of service to the community and positive track record that we can point back to. And that, I think, makes a huge difference because if you have not built that relationship, you've got some barriers to overcome sometimes with those groups.
Sure. There's a lot of misconceptions as to what happens to an area when it has a lot of rentals and maybe how well they're fixed. We just recently did a TV piece, and the person that was doing the interview went through the properties before and after, and it was great to see the look on their face. I mean, they actually were, I think astonished would be the right word, at what we turned it into, and that was a rental. So that's what needs to happen, is they need to be exposed to what we bring to the party. We take that vacant property and not only restore that property, we improve the values of the neighborhood, which, you know, you start following those dominoes, increases employment and also increases tax revenue.
We estimate that we contribute somewhere near $3 billion as investors to the economy because of not just the specifics of the property, but the other businesses that we touch in doing so.
Well, here's the big question. How does this message get down to the people that say okay to approving some more generous financing? Because right now it's very difficult to get financing for anything that's a rental or anything that would be a fixer-upper.
I was gonna say, unless it's a 750-plus credit score, it's been difficult across the board, and I've heard that consistently. I try not to be bank-bashing. But they're sitting on cash, and we are part of the result of the credit crunch, where we're sitting here and can't make the investments that we need to. Part of that in trying to do our part is why we went to, you know, HR 3440 to start that cash flow moving so that you can at least, if you do have properties already and can sell them, you can start that process and hopefully, if you need to, even do that with properties that you want to invest into.
You know, they right now have a program that gives an $8,000 check back to the owner-occupant for buying their first property. I think a better policy would be to let existing loans be taken over subject to without worrying about either an assumption fee or the lender calling the loan due. And that used to exist. FHA used to have that type of loan where you didn't have to qualify for taking over the payment. You just send in a fee, and as long as the loan was current, there you go. Any talk about that type of creativity again?
There hasn't, but the more that we're at the table, the more chance we have of that possibility occurring.
Okay. There's in California, what has happened, you have a lot of major investors that 1031 exchanged out to other states,
mm-hmm.
got financing, and they can't return. They have 10 loans. So they're basically stuck wherever they're at, because if they exchange without financing, they'd pay one hefty tax bill, and they simply can't get financing once they pass the 10 property level. So there's a lot of properties in California that would be bought by those 1031 exchanges, and they just can't happen. So it's just interesting how we have this big problem, and a lot of the decisions that we're making are really preventing it from being solved as easy as it could be.
Well, and part of it too, Bruce, I'm sure you could have a lot of experts on that would be an entire show on the political climate. It sounds good to give money to first-time home buyers and
mm-hmm.
to stimulate that portion of the market. And there's a lot of course, how do I say this correctly? FHA loans are very popular because of other political ideas of the moment.
Okay.
So pushing people that are first-time home buyers through on an FHA loan is a very popular thing to do. So even if we improve the idea of the investor, that is not going to be the only thing that solves that problem. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh. No, okay. I completely understand. I do.
And if I can say it a different way, as we raise the political clout of the investor, we have more access to those kind of financing abilities through the government, and they'll take us more seriously and consider those kind of changes.
I like that. Now, you have a number of events that are coming up, but the day on the Hill happens to be the legislation. Is that coming early next year, and what date is that?
Day on the Hill is early in the year. It is traditionally in April, and you actually caught me a tiny bit off guard.
That's
because
okay.
It is not the next one on the horizon,
right,
therefore I don't have the date memorized for that.
That's okay. You have a technology conference coming up in just a few days, actually.
We do, and that is kind of the focus for us. part of what we're doing with the technology conference is on at least National RIA's end, is to allow us to get the word out about what we're doing and legislatively and positioning the investor as, you know, the kind of the good guy in the white hat, and trying to make sure that communities and the general public understand that. So we'll be talking about some of those issues at Marketing and Technology. Day on the Hill happens in Washington, D.C. every year in April, and that will actually, as soon as technology is finished, will actually be posted on the website for the date, and the ability to register will be there as well.
Okay, fantastic. Probably our last question, Charles, any legislation that kind of concerns you as far as investor causes?
Oh.
Too long?
Boy, there's a little over 5,200 bills we're tracking. I was actually looking at it
okay.
right now, and let me address it more in terms of trends.
Okay, sure. Now that's
there's a couple of trends that we see. One is from the foreclosure consultant.
Okay.
Is one piece.
Okay.
There's some of the foreclosure moratoriums, which are one aspect.
Mm-hmm.
But then they'll also do. There's been a push. It keeps raising its head up and going away, which is a foreclosure modification process.
Okay.
Which means that the judges or somebody, some unknown czar yet, will come forward and modify people's loans.
Very scary.
Yeah, who knows based on what and how. Those are a couple of things. But it really is, it feels good. Everybody wants to save people who are in foreclosure. And nobody wants to necessarily hold accountability or responsibility or look at those things. And sometimes there are bad situations. But if we don't deal with them on a piece-by-piece basis, we're going to end up getting slaughtered when the whole bulk of them come down on us.
I agree.
That's part of the problem financially. But
well, I tell you what, I wish we had more time. We will have to do this again when we do. Rebecca, thanks for joining us. And Charles, I really appreciate the chance to speak with you about these things. And you know what? We'll be a bigger part of that, and I'll definitely attend that day on the Hill. I'll be excited to do that.
We look forward to having you there.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Bruce.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com. The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate 2009. 1M1 Properties, Dalmay Properties, Elite Auctions, the Inland Empire Investors Forum, Las Brisas Escrow, Los Angeles Event Center, The Mortgage Equity Group, Mike Cantu, Northern California Real Estate Investors Association, North San Diego Real Estate Investors Association, Real Wealth Network, Realty 411 Magazine, San Jose Real Estate Investors Association, the REO Mentor Tony Alvarez, Westin South Coast Plaza, Women's Council of Realtors Inland Valley Chapter. To find out more about I Survived Real Estate 2009 and how you can get involved, visit isurvived2009.com.